On the key of it.
Yes. Sorry, it's just setting up.
Okay.
So the Kiev area?
Yeah.
Do you have any Russian traditions that you know of from that area, or is it just only from the genealogy?
No, only from the genealogy.
Okay. Do you know when your family came to the United States?
Yeah. They all came between 1901 and 1904. They all came separately. My paternal grandparents came single, and they met in Norfolk, Virginia, and got married there. That's where I was born and raised too. And my maternal grandparents were married, but without children, and they came over about a year apart.
And they came separately or together?
Separately.
Oh, separately?
Yeah.
Do you know what your family, did they have like a particular trade they did? Or?
No, they were basically, one grandfather was a teenager when he came. The other one was probably early 20s, the one that was married, but I have no idea what he did. I mean, I know later in life when I was born. And
yeah. How would you describe your childhood in Virginia?
Normal? Yeah.
Well, what would you do on an average day, would you say?
Well, things were a lot different then. We didn't have social media, so we played outside, and we played a lot of ball, and we played in the streets. Between grammar school or elementary and junior high and high school, all in three different locations, I walked to school. In my day, there was no such thing as taking a bus to school or even carpools with parents. I mean, you went to neighborhood schools. That's where you went.
How far of a walk was it?
Well, they were in different directions, but I would say less than a mile each way.
Did you have like a group of friends, you would say, that you went with most schools to?
Yeah. I had a lot of friends, but there were several that I was particularly close to.
How would you describe that friend group, I guess?
Well, there were two guys and a gal. The gal, I have a younger brother, but the gal was like my sister, and she treated me like her brother. One other one was 2 months younger than me, and he and I were in the same grade, and so we went all through school together from kindergarten through the University of Virginia. The third one was 9 months younger than me, but his parents and my parents were very close. In fact, they used to joke a lot because he was exactly 9 months younger than me, that when his parents saw what a beautiful baby I was, they went and conceived me. That's how my wife will catch it.
Okay. How observant were you as a child of Judaism?
Well, I was raised in a conservative shul and bar mitzvahed in a conservative shul. But like most of my friends, once I was bar mitzvahed, I didn't continue Jewish education. So we went to shul on the holidays. I don't recall past bar mitzvah going on Shabbat, unless there was a special reason. But always went Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Were most of your friends Jewish? Or
all of my friends were Jewish. There was one non-Jewish friend. But where I grew up, there were two things in Norfolk. One, it was the segregated South then. So all my schools were all Caucasian white people. And two, I've never seen this phrase, but I use it a lot. It was what I would call social segregation. And that is, the Jewish kids socially didn't mix with the non-Jewish kids. We ate by choice, I guess, but we ate together, we palled around together. If the non-Jewish kids had parties, they didn't invite us. Or if we had parties, we didn't invite them.
Were there, like,
but there was no problems of anti-Semitism or any of that. Everybody got along fine. If it was a school dance, everybody got along fine, you know?
Yeah. Were there different organizations within, like, high schools? I know certain high schools back in the day used to have fraternities and, like, different, like, non-official groups, like there were Jewish fraternities, non-Jewish fraternities and everything?
Well, there were two AZA chapters growing up, and so all the Jewish boys belong, I won't say all, but everybody I knew belonged to one of the two AZA chapters. I don't know about the non-Jewish fraternities.
Did you belong to that chapter?
I did, and I was what they called Aleph Gadol my senior year, which is like president.
Oh. What activities did, like, they do?
Dances.
Dances mostly?
Yeah. Yeah, and there were sports leagues among the area Jewish groups from Portsmouth, Newport News, Hampton. It's all what's called the Tidewater area. We used to have basketball leagues, played in the junior high school that was close to me. There were dances. Every AZA chapter had a sweetheart. So, yeah, it was really nice. It was social and athletic.
Were there any other organizations you belonged to?
You mean in high school?
Or early childhood.
Well, yeah, I belong to an organization called Demo Lay, which is like a junior Masonic organization in high school. You stayed in until you were 21 years old, but once I went to college when I was 17, almost 18, I never went to Demo Lay again. But I was active in Demo Lay.
What did they do?
Well, it was like the Masonic fraternity. It was just generally try to do good things for people. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like a service organization. Yeah. A lot of rituals associated with it, but that was it.
Okay. What other activities did you do growing up for, like, leisure time?
Leisure time?
Yeah.
Well, let me, I don't know if you'd call this leisure, but I'll give you other activities. One, I love baseball, and there was a radio station in Norfolk called WNOR, which carried the Yankees games. Yeah, you'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
But they weren't live as they are today. The games came into the studio. We had a live broadcast. The games came into the studio by teletype. And we had an announcer. I was the statistician. I used to get all the box scores in the morning, update all the, you know, standard figures from ERA to hits, stolen bases, errors, whatever. And I would feed this announcer the information, but the way it worked was it would say ball one, and the announcer would say, Vic Grashy goes into his windup, kicks high, low and inside. And then we had crowds, volumes. So if the Yankees were at home, and some Yankee did something good, a home run, we turned up the volume of the fans, you know. So it to the audience, it was like hearing a live baseball game. But the facts were straight, but all the color was made up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Balls hit the deep left center field, Mickey Mantle's running back, he jumps high and he catches it, you know. So that was one of my jobs. It wasn't a paid job, but I loved doing it. And then I carried newspapers for a couple years. Delivered papers to a little over 100 customers. And then, starting in my junior year, I started working in a men's clothing store Friday nights and Saturdays. I started off like a stock boy, and my first sales job was in the scouting department. I sold Boy Scout and Cub Scout uniforms, which was fun because the parents would come in with their kids and so forth. And that reminds me, I was in Boy Scouts too, and I became a life, that's one below Eagle. I never made Eagle, but I was life rank.
Were Boy Scouts Jewish kids and Christians?
Yeah, the Boy Scout troop was sponsored by the synagogue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how did you decide to go to UVA?
Well, I was the first person in my family to go to college. Neither of my parents went to college, and I was the oldest grandchild on both sides. So I was the first. How did I decide to go to UVA? I don't know. I guess it was just assumed I would go to UVA. My parents didn't have a lot of money, So in-state tuition was something they could handle as opposed to going out of state. So that's how I went to UVA.
How would you describe UVA?
Oh, it was a great school. It was a great school. In those days, it had a very big party reputation. Still may, I don't know.
Still does.
I joined a fraternity. Practically everybody at UVA joined a fraternity. I mean, if you wanted social life, it was all male. It was all white.
Did you join a Jewish fraternity?
I did. Well, you didn't have a choice. Yeah. Non-Jewish fraternities would not rush you. But there were three Jewish fraternities. I joined ZBTs. They didn't have a talk.
Yeah.
And my last 2 years there, I was the kitchen manager, which meant I went and purchased all the food, and the wait staff worked for me, and the cooks. And in exchange for that, I got free room and board, and I lived in a fraternity house. So we didn't rush till like May of your freshman year. I mean, that's when you joined, in May of your freshman year, and then the second year, you had to live, everybody had to live in a fraternity house, the brothers. But then I had to live in the fraternity house because I was the kitchen manager. And in between, we physically bought another house. And so I had to outfit the whole new kitchen and everything.
Jeez, how big was your fraternity?
About 60 brothers. That's how many I had to feed. 20 meals a day. I mean, 20 meals a week. We had only 2 meals on Sunday.
Jeez. Did you witness any anti-Semitism in UVA?
No.
Okay.
Again, it's like social segregation.
So
everybody got along fine, no problems, but nobody mingled socially.
Okay. What did you major in UVA?
Accounting.
Accounting. All right. So how did you decide to join the military?
Well, that was a pretty easy decision. I joined Naval ROTC when I went to UVA. In those days, you got drafted when you came out of college in the Army as an enlisted man. And I never was one of these physical, rough and tough guys, and I really didn't want to be in the Army. And Norfolk has the largest, still does, largest naval base in the world, so I was used to growing up seeing nothing but Navy. So it was an easy choice for me to apply to the Navy. I was lucky I got in, I guess, because a lot of people didn't get in. And I remember the very first day after we were admitted, the commanding officer talked to us. There were 120 of us. That's all they wanted. So that's what they wanted. And the commanding officer told us, look at the guy on your left and the guy on your right, and only one of you three going to make it. And he was right. 39 out of 120 became officers when we graduated. And so that's, you know, I was going in the Navy as an officer rather than going in the Army as an enlisted man. So that was a driving force for me to join ROTC. Plus you got, it wasn't huge, but you got a check every month, which was my spending money, so.
How would you describe your time in the Army?
The Navy.
Oh, the Navy, sorry.
Unique. It was the most life-enhancing experience I ever had, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. But I always felt like I was a boy when I went into service and a man when I came out. Everybody in my class, of the 39 people who became officers, 6 became Marine officers. So that leaves 33 to be Naval officers. 31 went to sea. 1 went to the Pentagon. And I got assigned to a communication station in Morocco. So I went to Morocco for 20 months. And this communication station was in the middle of nowhere. And there were 1,200 people on the base. There were 900 sailors and officers and 300 Marines to protect us. And I was the only Jew on the base. And that really changed me because Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I stayed in my bedroom and prayed by myself. The Jewish Welfare Board provided me the siddurs. Pesach, I'd have my own Seder. And I would invite the non-Jewish officers and explain to them what the Seder was about. Again, the Jewish Welfare Board sent me matzah and a haggadahs. Didn't have manischewitz, had Moroccan wine. And I learned a lot about human behavior. And I learned about other kinds of people, which was very important. I mean, growing up, I didn't know farmers or farmers' children. I didn't know people who were unions working in plants because there were no real plants around. I didn't know blacks for sure. I didn't know that men physically struck women, but then I didn't know that men or women slept with people other than their spouses. So it was I didn't know people cheated and stole. The human behavior I learned in 20 months in Morocco, watching all kinds of people, working with all kinds of people, and a lot of wonderful people. I don't mean everybody was bad, but it was just exposure that I'd never had in my life. You know, I grew up in a sheltered Jewish community, same social economic group as most people. My parents didn't have any non-Jewish friends that I recall. All their friends were Jewish. And this was eye-opening. And I'd never been on an airplane when I graduated college. My first flight was a government flight flying me to Morocco. So I never regretted my years in the Navy. After Morocco, I spent 16 months in Norfolk, where I grew up, assigned to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The Navy side of it, the Army and Air Force then was in Paris, but President de Gaulle threw them out later and they moved to Belgium. But the Navy was in Norfolk for NATO, and that was a wonderful experience because I got to work with people from 15 different nations. My boss was an Army Lieutenant Colonel. I mean, all the branches were mixed up. His boss was a Royal Captain from the United Kingdom. That was a wonderful, it was like being in an embassy and mixing with people from all of them. So my experience in the military was wonderful. I never had a regret. I thought it was most beneficial. And then when I came to work for DuPont in June of 61, I had 2 years left on my active reserve duty. And since I knew communications, that's what we were in Morocco for, I joined a reserve communication unit in Camden, New Jersey. So for 2 years, once a week, I drove up to Camden for my meetings. But the Navy wanted me to stay in, but I didn't, basically for two reasons. One, I knew that if I ever got married, I wouldn't want to be pitching around in the North Atlantic and separated from my family. But two, I was behind everybody. I mean, you need sea experience to get promoted in the Navy. And I was here two assignments of shore duty with no sea experience. I was behind all my colleagues, plus the fact that at that time, when I looked up, there were no admirals unless you went to the Naval Academy. There were no ROTC admirals or OCS admirals, which was the other way to become an officer, Officer Candidate School. So I made a decision, well, you know, I'm not going to have a long-term future here, so.
When you invited your other naval officers to, like, your Sabbath dinner and everything, were they very receptive of your cultures and traditions, or?
Well, I don't know about the word receptive. Well, one, it wasn't Sabbath dinners. We're talking about Pesach. Shabbat never existed. One interesting fact, though, was when I went to Morocco in 58, remember, Israel was only 10 years old, and Morocco had the fourth largest Jewish population in the world after the U.S., Russia, and Israel. And that's all gone today. They hardly have a Jew there. So there were a lot of synagogues in town, about 20 miles from where the base was in nowhere. And I went a couple times, but I didn't speak French. And there was no English spoken in the synagogues, so I stopped going. So back to your question about accepting. There were 14, there are 7 bedrooms in the BOQ, Bachelor Officer of Quarters. So there were 2 officers to a bedroom. So I'd say more than half the officers had never met a Jew before. They grew up on a farm in Nebraska, or they were a Mormon from Utah, or they only went to parochial schools, including a parochial college. My roommate, his name was Sullivan, Dave Sullivan from Boston, from an Irish family. He'd never met a Jew. So I was like a novelty to him. And people would say to me, and you could interpret it as being anti-Semitic, but I didn't, you know, you're a pretty normal guy for being Jewish. You know, I something would click in my head, but I wouldn't respond in a negative way. Because I got along with everybody, and everybody accepted me, but I was a learning experience for them, because a lot of them had never met a Jew before, and found out a Jew was normal.
How did you meet your wife?
Well, I came to work for DuPont in June of 61, and in the first week, I found out that the JCC had a singles event. Now, in those days, the JCC had a campsite. I don't know whether you know where the Kutz Home Senior Center is, but it's on the other side of town. And there was a big campus and like a clubhouse there. Eventually, when the JCC moved to where it is now, close to here, they sold that land. The county actually wanted the land. And so the county bought the land. Now it's a big park. But there was a building there, like a big home. And so I went to this JCC singles event, and I met my wife there, and we had an instant connection because she went to Murray Washington College, which in those days was the sister school, University of Virginia. And she was dating at UVA, and I was dating at Murray Washington. And we knew a lot of people in common from that first day we met. So there was like a natural connection. And in fact, she became my friend, not my girlfriend, and she used to fix me up with dates. So for the first few years I was Wilmington, she was my best source of dates. But then she took off to go get a graduate degree at Tulane University. She was a social worker, went to get her master's in social work. And I really missed her. I realized my friend's not here and I'm kind of lost. So then I knew, I figured, you might be in love, buddy. So I couldn't wait for her to get home Christmas time. And that's the story I met her. pretty not unusual to meet a Jewish girl, if you're Jewish, at a JCC singles event.
Did your parents ever discourage you from inter-religious marriages?
Never was a subject. Never came up.
Never came up?
No.
Okay. How would you describe your time at DuPont? We read in class about some other individuals who experienced some hostility towards them for being Jewish. I was just curious if you had any similar experiences or...
No, I never ran into anything that was anti-Semitic. I mean, people might have been talking behind your back, but nothing to your face. And I'm not saying anybody was talking behind your back, just I never heard anything. No. And I was very fortunate when I retired from DuPont, I was the treasurer of the company. And prior to that, we had a CEO named Merv Shapiro, who was the... So we didn't, not to my knowledge.
How did you get your job at DuPont?
When it was time to get out of Navy, I was getting out in June of 61, probably around January of 61 or maybe February. I wrote a letter to the top 50 companies in the Fortune 500 list and asked about their financial management training programs. And got a lot of responses and got interviewed by a lot of companies. The interesting thing to me was everybody who responded, I asked about their management training programs, but everybody who responded told me about their financial management training programs, probably because I was a major in accounting. And so I narrowed it down to three companies that made offers I thought were interesting. Eastman Kodak in Rochester, New York, IBM in New York City, it was in their auditing department, and DuPont. And it was an easy decision for me. I couldn't tell any difference from the three companies. They were all huge companies in those days. The pay was essentially the same, so you couldn't decide based on what your compensation was going to be. So I didn't want, being a Southerner, I didn't want the snow in Rochester, New York, working for Eastman Kodak in the cold winters. And the job at IBM, which was really interesting, but I decided not to take it. It was in their auditing program, and the first 2 years you were on the road every week auditing their sales offices, but you weren't allowed to even have dinner with the people from IBM because you were there to audit them. They viewed it as a conflict of interest if you socialized by going to dinner. And then you spent 2 years going to their plants. So it was a four-year program, and they made it very clear, because they had problems with people. People get tired of being on the road. They come in, they want to be transferred. But the answer is going to be no. You're signing up for 4 years of a life on the road. And I decided, although I never traveled in America, I mean, my first plane ride was to Morocco, that it would be better not to have that kind of life, even though it could have been interesting. And DuPont is telling you, close to the mountains, close to the shore, close to New York, close to Washington, close to Philly. Wilmington was the same kind of town like Norfolk, not a big city. Norfolk's bigger than Wilmington, but not much. And it just seemed natural to go to an area that was kind of like where I grew up, because I wasn't interested in going to live in New York City, for example. I was a small town guy. And DuPont's program looked as good as the other two. So that's how I came to DuPont. It was based on location when you cut all through it.
So you came to Delaware because of DuPont?
Absolutely.
Okay. Could you describe the Jewish community when you came into, like, or, so when you, let me rephrase that. So in when you came to Delaware, could you describe the Jewish community in the area you lived in, I guess?
Yeah, I lived in, first I took a room in the Y for 5 or 6 nights. Interesting, I read today in the paper about the YMCA is throwing out a bunch of homeless people. It's headlines on the front page of the News Journal today. But they had rooms to rent, and I rented a room. That's where DuPont suggested to you find a place to stay in the Y. And I did, as I said, for 5-6 days. And then I rented a room in a widow's house at 23rd and Franklin Street. And she was a recent widow. And the first night, she asked me what church I went to. And I said, well, I was Jewish. I went to synagogues. And she insisted I meet the rabbi who lives 4 houses down from her. So there were a lot of Jewish families around in the neighborhood. So you want to know about the Jewish community. One thing that really struck me when I got here is in Norfolk, when I grew up, the Reform Temple, and it was only one, was made up of people of German Jewish descent. And the Conservative Temple was Eastern Europe, Russia, as well as the Orthodox Temple. And it was no social integration. I mean, the German Jews were entirely separate. And I learned later this is the way it was generally in the South. And it was a big shock to me when I came to Wilmington to found out that everybody got along. Didn't matter what synagogue you went to. And that was a real eye-opener to me. But there was a JCC here, and I took advantage of that, obviously, and got involved in the synagogue because this rabbi that I told you lived four houses down. When I went to Shulam Friday night, he and I walked together and back, so I got to know the rabbi when I was still a young single guy, and it was a conservative shul like I grew up in. So it seemed to me, other than this German Jew, Russian Jew split, which I saw in Norfolk, and this was much better. So I thought probably typical amongst Jewish communities
those days. What other activities? You said you did some activities with the rabbi, activities with JCC. What other activities did you do, if you remember? Besides, like, I know you said it before, the JCC, you had the singles night you went to. Did they have other events, or, like...
Well, they may have, but I don't recall them. I don't recall them, other than that one I went to and met my wife. But they may have. But I met some... I got introduced. I had a name when I didn't know anybody in Wilmington when I came here. But I had one name. And the fellow's name was Charlie Kyle. And I was told Charlie was single. So I called him the first week I was in town, told him who'd give me his name. There was a guy in Norfolk that I knew from UVA. And Charlie was a young lawyer, just recently graduated from Penn Law School. And he invited me over to dinner. And I thought that was very nice. So I went to dinner. But that's when I found out he was married with two kids, and he wasn't single. But he was a very nice guy, and so he gave me the names and handled a lot of introductions for me to the young Jewish guys in town. And so I met a lot of them. We used to play poker, ping pong, go to ball games, all kinds of stuff. I had a bunch of Jewish buddies that really, because of Charlie, introduced me to these families.
So baseball games and like ping pong were pretty much your activities you did besides
poker.
Poker besides work during the early times.
There were two things. I mean, it could only be done on the weekend for this reason. Tuesday nights, I was going to Camden, New Jersey for the Navy, and I got here in June, as I said. In September, I signed up for an MBA program at UD in the evening. So Monday and Wednesday were my classes. So for three nights in a row for 2 years, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I wasn't available. I used to, when I went to UD, Monday and Wednesday nights, I'd rush off for work. I would always have dinner at the counter, what was called the Howard Johnson's on Kirkland Highway. Today it's called Crossroads Restaurant. I don't know whether you know it or not.
I know where
it's not
it
far
is.
From UD. So I went to UD for 2 years, and in those days, to get an MBA, you had to write a thesis, which saved you another course. So I ended up with four courses, two courses a year, plus a thesis to get my MBA. So I didn't have much time other than the weekends to pal around with people.
What did you get your MBA in?
We didn't have a specialty then.
Oh, okay.
It was just an MBA.
How would you describe your time at UD with the classes? Would you say most of them were Jewish individuals, or would you say that would, or you just wouldn't really know in that?
Well, I really wouldn't know, but I can say this. I didn't know one Jewish individual in my class.
Okay.
But these were all people, night school, everybody's got jobs during the day.
Okay.
So you're not socializing with anybody or anything like that.
Why did you end up leaving DuPont?
Well, after 29 years, and as I said, I was the vice president and treasurer, and I never was thinking of leaving. One night about 5:30, and I distinctly remember it was in January of 1990, around 5:30. I hadn't gone home yet, and I took a phone call, and it was a headhunter. And he talked to me about an opportunity for being the CFO of a large telecommunications company. And he asked me to send him his resume, my resume. And I said, I don't have a resume. I'm not looking for a job. So he asked me to describe my experiences at DuPont for a while. And he thanked me. And then he called me back Friday. He said, the CEO lives in Villanova, Pennsylvania. You know where Villanova is? I said, yeah, about 45 minutes from here. He said, he'd like to meet you Saturday morning for an hour. And I said, okay. And we made a date for 10 o'clock with the headhunter. And I showed up at his house. And I stayed there to 4 in the afternoon. He and I hit it off real well. I liked him, but I also liked what he had to say about the role of finance. And so I came home and I told my wife, you know, if I get a decent offer, I just may go. Now, this job was in outside of Toronto. This was not here. And she couldn't believe it and that I would even think about it. And so I met with him, and the headhunter called me Saturday evening. Says he wants you to come to Canada on Monday to meet a lot of the senior management team. And I said, I can't come Monday. I just can't not show up at work. So it ended up I took Tuesday off, and I flew up to Canada, and I met a lot of the team. And he said to me, I got to have your decision. He made me an offer when I left that day. And he said, I got to have your decision tomorrow because the board meets on Thursday. And if you're going to accept, I got to get the board to appoint you on Thursday. So I came home, my wife and I talked over and over again, and what are we going to do? And finally I decided, why not? I don't know if I'll ever be CFO at DuPont. Maybe I will. But I wasn't sure I would, because my boss was only 4 years older than me, and if he had worked to 65, of course then I was 53 and he was 57. But if he had worked to 65, I would have never gotten a job. So I went to work in Canada, but I did a lot of traveling, and it was a great experience. So that's when I left DuPont. I actually left the end of February in 90.
Did you drive to Canada usually, or you flew most of the time?
Flew. But I wasn't always in Canada, because half the time I was traveling on company business, and we had a U.S. office, which was in McLean, Virginia, right outside of Washington. So I spent a few days in Washington or McLean, and then I'd be on the road at least half the time. We were doing acquisitions. When I went with the company, 97% of the sales was in the U.S. and Canada, and the CEO wanted to go international. And so I was his point man for trying to buy companies and joint ventures. So I spent a lot of time overseas. And I'd done it. One of my jobs at DuPont was international finance. So I was used to traveling overseas.
So just trying to figure out timeline. How many? Do you have three or four boys?
Three.
Did you have them before or after you left for Canada?
Oh,
just trying to figure that out. Yeah.
Well, that was part of the decision.
Oh no, that would be no. Sorry, I just figured that out.
Okay. Well, yeah. One was at UVA. One was going to UVA. That was his senior year in high school. And the other one, so my boys are 18 months apart, so there's only 3 years from top to bottom. In fact, 1 year, all three were at UVA together. That made for easy parents' weekend.
Yeah.
Sure, no, I wouldn't have gone unless the boys were grown and on their own.
Did you send them to regular high schools or private high schools?
Private.
Were they Jewish high schools or just...
Wilmington Friends, Quaker School.
Okay. Did you send them to Hebrew classes? I guess temple classes.
Sure, they were all bar mitzvahs. two of my boys right through high school. One at the main congregation services, one read Torah for Rosh Hashanah, and the other read Torah for Yom Kippur. So, and they were, two of the three were president of what now is called BBYO. It's like ACA, but it's BBYO. So two of them were presidents there. No, they were involved, Jewish-wise, all of them.
How did your family celebrate holidays?
You talking about when I grew up or
family here? No, this family now.
Well, same thing. Rosh Hashanah, holiday, Pesach, get everybody together. My wife and I fairly frequently have always gone to Friday night services. I'd say half the time, you know. So it was the main three holidays. Have the two Seders and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Would you say you were more observant now or more observant growing up?
Definitely more observant now. I think my experience in Morocco, we didn't talk about one other thing, but my experience in Morocco being the only Jew on the base made me a stronger committed Jew. So definitely more observant now. I have been since I left the Navy. But the other thing about Morocco was, and I don't know whether you noticed it, but I have a flag flying on my house.
The American flag?
Yes. And that is because that was my only touch of home. Every morning at 8 o'clock, the flag would rise on the base to the Star Spangled Banner, and we all, wherever you were, stopped and saluted. If you're in a car, you stopped, jumped out, and saluted. And every night at sunset, they played taps, and the flag went down. And that was my other touch of home. And ever since then, I've always flown a flag. I wear a flag in my lapel. It's an amazing thing when you're overseas, and I won't say you're alone, but when you're the only Jew, America means a lot more to you, the freedom Jews have in America compared to other countries, and it just hit me hard being. So I came back, one, more a committed Jew, and two, more of a patriot in that sense, or sharing patriotism.
Did your kids marry other Jewish individuals, or...?
Two of the three did, and the third one married a girl who was Christian but really not religious, and their children are being raised Jewish. I mean, they've been through the mikveh and converted, and okay. So all my grandchildren are Jewish, which I'm very happy for.
Okay. Oh, let's see. So you said today you go to the synagogue usually on Fridays.
Friday night.
And you go to the Beth Shalom synagogue, yep. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any like other involvement there now, or just really?
Well, let's start with this. I'll give you a little history. One, I'm 83 years old now. But when I was 35 years old, I became president of the synagogue at the 50th anniversary, which was in the Gold Ballroom at the Hotel DuPont. And I was probably the youngest in the history of the synagogue to be the president. And I did something that still has major impacts today. And in fact, I talked about it, not this past Saturday, but two Saturdays ago. It was the 70th anniversary of my bar mitzvah, so I asked for a leah, and they asked me to speak. But in those days, women couldn't participate in religious services, couldn't even go on a bima. And I went to a United Synagogue convention with my wife in 71 and heard a huge debate about whether we ought to, the conservative movement should give women more rights. And the outcome of that decision by United Synagogue, which is the parent of all the conservative shuls, local option, each shul can decide to do what you want. So I came back determined to give women equal rights. And I talked to the rabbi, and he was very supportive. And that year, I happened to be vice president, and I talked to the president, who was a friend of mine, and he was supportive. So, but a lot of the board wasn't for it. So I came back like November of 71, and it didn't get voted on because we didn't know if we had the votes till August of 72, where we granted women equal rights to participate in services. And a few, you know, a month later, Rosh Hashanah was the first time two women set foot on the Bima. And I'm very proud of that, that I had a role to play in giving women equal rights in our synagogue. And then we had another thing that was traumatic, but I was, the president always sat on the Bima during the high holidays. And this was Yom Kippur 1973, and we're sitting on the Bima, I'm sitting on the Bima, and I get the word that Israel's been attacked by its Arab neighbors. And so the rabbi and I and the High Holy Day chairman made a decision, we better tell the congregation. And we did, and after Yisker, which was in the afternoon, we took the Torahs and marched around the block to show solidarity with Israel. So, but I stayed involved, and I'm a life member of the board. But as a matter of personal philosophy, I've never been to a board meeting since then. But I get all the board minutes, the agenda, and all that, unless they're very involved. And the synagogue's called on me many times. For example, the last two rabbis we hired, I was chair of the search committee, and we interviewed them in this very room that you're sitting in. When they had some financial difficulties about 5-6 years ago, they asked me to renegotiate a refinancing of the mortgage with the bank, which I did. So I don't want any leadership responsibilities anymore at my age, but I'm still willing to help anybody who asks for help in one of the organizations that I've been involved with.
Just going back on one of your earlier points, why do you think there were certain board members pushed back against having females in the
whole, you know, that's the way it was. A lot of people are traditionalists. It's hard to make change. Any kind of change is hard. I think it's just traditionalism. They just have it. I mean, several members threatened to leave and go to the Orthodox show. In fact, nobody left. I mean, despite the threats, nobody left.
Have you ever been to Israel?
Twice.
Can you describe the first one to start, I guess? Your first trip?
This was when I was president of the Jewish Federation of Delaware. And they had what called a president's mission. Presidents from all of the different federations. And so my wife and I went, and one of these three good friends growing up, the one that was 2 months younger than me, he and his wife went with us. And we were there, I think, 10 or 12 days. It was a wonderful experience, and just the first time you walk up to the wall is just very emotional. But we toured around a lot and left the mission a couple days and got our own guide. And it was a wonderful experience. Then I took my kids back 4 years later. In fact, I'll show you a picture here. It's my favorite picture. Come here. That's it. That's my three boys praying at the wall with their arms around each other and crying. So I haven't been back to Israel since 89. I don't know that I want to go back. I mean, if there was a special opportunity, somebody had a bar mitzvah or something, I would go. But I have been in about 65 countries and 49 states. So I'm not really interested in doing a lot of traveling for the sake of just seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to do things just to, it's a reason to go.
Yeah. What does Israel mean to you?
Well, I mean, it's the Jewish people. It's the home of the Jewish people. And I'm glad it's there after all these millennium almost. And it's a place to go where Jews get in trouble wherever they live. And I think that's critical. So I'm a supporter of Israel.
Does your church support Israel in any sort of way by, like, I know certain groups, they send like some of their younger representatives to like volunteer there.
Well, there's a program not related to the synagogue, but I think you probably might be familiar with it. It's called Birthright Israel.
Oh yeah.
And I think I give money to them, not a fortune, but some money, because I think that's the right thing to do for young people to go to Israel and get exposed to it. Yeah.
Let's see. So currently, would you categorize the area you live in now as a more Jewish area or a mixed area?
Definitely mixed. I think, well, I'm told, I don't know if it's a fact, but there were a lot of areas of Wilmington when I came here that Jews couldn't move into. Now I'm not aware of any restrictions, and Jews live wherever they want. That means we're spread out everywhere. We're not concentrated in any place.
Okay, so what does it mean for you to be Jewish in America, like today? Would you say there are two separate identities or an interconnected one?
Well, I would think it's interconnected. I mean, I consider myself a Jewish American. And I say it that way as opposed to an American Jew. But again, it's my Moroccan experience of feeling Judaism strongly, feeling patriotism strongly. I mean, that's me. I'm a Jewish American, and I'm proud of it. It's the way I was raised. I never gave a thought to leaving the country or being another religion.
Are there any family heirlooms or anything? Just that's been passed down from generation.
Only one thing. I have a pair of Shabbat candlesticks that one of my maternal grandmother brought with her from Russia. So I still have them for, you know, light for Shabbat candles and stuff. That's the only thing. I was just going to say something, but I forgot it. So, but that, nothing more than that one heirloom.
What was he saying? I meant to ask this earlier, but do you have any family stories of the depression or anything growing up? Because that's like a little before.
Well, I was born during the depression.
Yeah, but like, so I just didn't know if you would really remember.
Well, I don't remember the impacts of depression, but I know my dad, on one hand, felt very fortunate. He had a job. He worked for the newspaper in Norfolk. And so a lot of people didn't have work. So he felt very fortunate at that time to have a job. On the other hand, a lot of people who didn't have jobs got forced to do things, go in businesses, made a lot more money than he did. So the flip side was having a job, he didn't go out and take risk or be forced to take risk, and who knows how it would have turned out. But that's the only story I heard about depression, that he was very fortunate to have a job.
Do you believe that the United States should still be aiding Israel in its efforts to protect itself against its neighboring.
Absolutely.
Do you have any, are you, there, you have any other thoughts on current relations? Like, I know, I'm trying to think of how to word this. There's been talk of U.S. withdrawing support over, I don't know. I'm trying to think of how to word this, sorry.
Well, you're still talking about Israel?
Yeah. It's...
Well, first of all, let me say I'm non-political. I'm a lifelong independent. I've never belonged to parties. I don't contribute to parties. I like being an independent. I vote both ways. I vote both based on the candidate and what the candidate's policies, at least what the candidate says their policies are going to be. Doesn't always turn out that way. So I think, I mean, historically, since the founding of Israel, it didn't matter which party was in power in the U.S., they were supportive of Israel. And I anticipate that in the future, but there's no guarantees in the future, so.
Okay. Are there any other stories you would want to share that you could think of that has had a big impact of on your life?
Well, I can talk more about my community involvement.
Yeah.
I told you I was president of the shul, and I was president of the federation. I was also president of the Kutz Home, which is the home for the elderly. And I don't think anybody in the history of community has been president of three major organizations. Yeah. And a couple things that I feel good about. When I was president of the federation, we never had an endowment fund, and we created an endowment fund. And two older guys I asked to lead the effort, and they did a wonderful job. They're both passed away now, Sonny Chaikin and Sonny Schutzman. And it was a fellow named Bernie Siegel who helped them. Now, they were all older than me. But they did a wonderful job in getting this thing set up, and today it has $28 million, which is great, I think, for this small community. And I feel good about being president when I got established. The other thing is we built what's called the Jewish Community Center Family Campus. We had a building, but we didn't have ball fields, amphitheaters, swimming pools. The building, everything was inside. So we built a campus all around it, and we did all the planning, did all the fundraising, started the construction. It got finished after I left office, but I feel good when I... That is now the site of the JCC camp, which I said I met my wife over the other one before it got sold to the county. So we have a place there, which I feel good about. So I've been involved in Jewish communal life. I've done a lot in the non-Jewish community too. But I don't know. I guess my avocation of hobbies is community involvement and volunteering my time, because I've never had a hobby. And I used to think that's abnormal, you know, whether it's woodworking or painting or whatever. I kind of like everything. I love sports, but I can go to ball games, and I can go to the opera, and I can go to a lecture, and that's me. I don't have any specialty that I'm all involved with. So I guess if I had one, I'd call it community involvement.
Community involvement?
Yeah.
So what baseball team do you like?
Well, today, the Phillies, but I'm turned off by the way they've been playing. I grew up a Yankee fan. Now, I didn't tell you when I was doing this statistical work and we carried the Yankees. I didn't tell you why we carried the Yankees. Norfolk was in what was called the Piedmont League, Class B minor league team, but the ball club was owned by the Yankees. So eventually the good players would all play through Norfolk, Class B, go to Class A, finally work their way up to the majors. And so we always identified in Norfolk with the Yankees because, you know, Whitey Ford was in Norfolk when he was young, and a lot of the ball players you could identify with.
How would you compare your Jewish community growing up in Virginia to the Jewish community in Wilmington?
I don't see much difference.
Besides the synagogue?
Besides the reform.
Reform.
I don't see any difference. And I've got a couple friends still down in Norfolk I talk to. Yeah, they do the same things as we do up here. You know, they got their JCC, they got their family service, they got their home for the elderly. They got all three branches of Judaism plus Chabad, and we got Chabad here too. So, yeah, I know. It's all the same, it looks like to me. And has been, I mean, through the years.
Yeah, I mean, those are all the questions I really have prepared. If there's any other stories, if not, I think that's pretty good.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other stories at the moment. But Wilmington's a great place. Don't know where you'll settle someday, but you know what Delaware's like anyway.
Yeah.
You've been here and you're in your senior year. So what are you majoring in?
I'm actually history education. I teach at, since now this is off, I'm student teaching at, do you know where Howard High School is?
Yes.
I'm there right now, and you're kind of close, but not really. I used to teach at Brandywine.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it's a similar way over here, but not really from where I used to.
Now, when you say you teach, do you have your own class? Assistant in my classroom?
Yeah, so in Brandywine, I was an assistant. Now, I'm technically an assistant, but the teacher just sits in the back of the room and doesn't say anything.
Okay, so you're teaching the class.
Yeah, I'm pretty much teaching it at this point, but...
That's nice.
Yeah.
One of my sons...